You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, folks, welcome to February 2014. It's Saturday night, February the 1st, and here we are on the air yet again. It doesn't matter what month, what week, what year, we will be here for you. And thank you for making that possible, folks. James Edwards, Keith Alexander in our Memphis studio tonight, and we're going to dive directly into the mailbag this evening. Got a handwritten note here from a listener who is corresponding with us for the first time out of Linden, Michigan. And Mark writes, "Thank you for doing God's work. The truth becomes more and more difficult to find as time passes. May God bless your endeavors as we await the return of our Lord Jesus Christ." Now, that is a simple two-sentence note that was written, and of course, we're a listener-supported show, and this gentleman sent in a contribution for which we are eternally grateful. But that right there sums up what the cesspool is all about. You know, you can find some garbage about us out there on the internet, really from two sources exclusively, the SPLC and the ADL. Other than that, I mean, whether it's Swedish television or CNN, they always introduce me, honestly, as a conservative radio host. Now, there will be sometimes you'll find newspaper articles that will quote the SPLC's opinion of us, but they give us the chance to, of course, rebut that. But, you know, if anyone asked me, how would you define your program? I would say we are a truly conservative show hosted by Christian men. We're Christian and we're conservative, nothing more, nothing less. Yes, we talk about taboo issues, but we do it from a position of honesty and love. And when I get an email, or rather a letter like this, you know, these are the people we are trying to reach. And thank you, Mark, for that. I got another letter from a first-time writer in Jackson, Mississippi. So from Michigan to Mississippi we go, and he too sent in a contribution this week. His name is Alan in Jackson, and he sent a simple note, as I'm showing it to Keith right here: thanks for telling the truth. Period. That's what we do here. Got another letter in this week from John, who writes, "I enjoy listening to the Political Cesspool. The broadcast allows me to listen to real conservative talk radio instead of what passes for it, people like Hannity, Beck, and all the rest." Thank you, John. Hey, you pegged us right. Conservative talk radio at its finest, the authentic, genuine article. That's where we are. So from Michigan to Mississippi, let's go across the Atlantic, shall we, to John, another John, in London, England, who writes, "While working in Cardiff, Wales this week, I saw a brochure for a taxpayer-funded museum. It is dedicated to celebrating the way the Welsh have lived, worked, and played for centuries. The cover photo was of two Pakistani women. I also saw an EU brochure aimed at the typical European family. Pictured was a white man, a black woman, and a tan baby. This type of propaganda is relentless in the United Kingdom and in Europe. On a recent trip to Paris and Parma, Italy, glorious monuments to our folks' history, creativity, and industry, I'm sad to report that I found the streets awash in sullen, loitering Muslim men and veiled women. Something's got to give." John, I couldn't agree more, and that's why we do the work that we do. Keith, I got a letter here from for you, addressed to you, from a listener and a contributor in California. And the letter includes a question, and so we'll open up the dialogue earnestly with this. "James, I love Keith Alexander and the South, and I don't want to crimp Keith's red state, blue state mantra, but we must address the impact of profound federal open borders and what it has caused with regard to demographic change, because that is what will erase us in the end. We cannot make a comeback if we no longer exist. California has not always been a blue state. 50 years ago, Hollywood had almost as little to do with the life of the average Californian as the average Tennessean. I now live in the Red County Sierras, but grew up in the 50s in a conservative Los Angeles with a conservative mayor, conservative police chief, and sheriff. So what happened? Because of our geography, the federal government's open borders policies meant a war on whites in California. Average Californians used to park their cars along the Mexican border at night and shine their headlights onto incoming invaders whom were promptly arrested. Of course, to no avail, all that has changed. But try to imagine what the politics of Tennessee would look like today if your state had been situated so closely to the Mexican border for almost 50 years since the 1965 Immigration Invasion Act. Tennessee would be firmly and irretrievably in the blue state column, not because it had been plotted by millions of liberals, but by millions of non-whites who would be reliably electing liberal Democrats. So, and he goes on to say, of course, in summation, that he loves the show and enjoys hearing about our well-deserved success, and that the show continues to get better and better. He signs his name as Thomas, a loyal fan and small contributor, he writes, from Red County, Sierra Nevada, Foothills, California. So, Keith, of course he's right. I mean, yes, red state, blue state matters, but the immigration invasion that is swamping California also has played a significant role in the demographic change and the cultural change and the political rot that is going on in that state. And certainly if Tennessee had been where Arizona is or California, we would probably have experienced a similar fate.
I agree with a lot of what he says, but I do think we have to realize that it is time for retrenchment. We're going to have to get the conservative people of America together. We're going to have to do that, not by this, you know, move to the Northwest, because quite frankly, I think we need to realize that our most profound enemy in final analysis is other white Gentiles who happen to be liberal. They're the fifth column in our midst. They are the backstabbers. They are the stalking horse of the left within our ranks. We need to recognize that those people, if it were not for those people, particularly among our elite, we could withstand any assault that any third party, be it black, brown, Jewish, whatever, threw at us. It's the traitors within our own midst that we have to worry about. And consequently, they're, you know, liberals, and I will continue to say this, are really our greatest enemy. All of the racial subgroups that we talk about, browns, blacks, Jews, whatever, are dangerous to us primarily because they are more liberal than us. More liberal means that they're more anti-white Gentile. So consequently, recognizing liberalism as the modern face of evil, as we do here at the political cesspool, makes sense. And what really made sense was our ancestors' recognition that we were different from those people here in what was then the old Confederacy, which has morphed into red state America now, and that we need to be two separate countries, because in all the ways that a nation is distinguished by its folkways, by its virtues, by its heroes, we are different people from those people who are in charge in blue state America. I think there'd be a great sorting out if we did have two nations. I think that there would be a lot of people like the gentleman that just wrote us from California who would be invited to move to red state America, and there would be many white Gentiles in red state America that could replace him in blue state America, so everybody would be happy. Everybody could have a government and a nation that reflected their basic zeitgeist. So I respectfully dissent, but I do appreciate all the comments that you make.
We're going to take our first break of the night, folks, but it's only going to get more intense from here on out. Stay tuned. We got a lot to throw your way tonight in the political cesspool.
Are you looking to experience the great outdoors in comfort? Are you sick and tired of sleeping bags that are too small, cots that are too narrow, or backpacks that just don't stand up to the wear and tear? Look no further than Teton Sports, a leader in quality, comfortable camping gear. Try our Teton Sports Mammoth 0° sleeping bag. This comfortable, family-sized sleeping bag can hold two adults and one child, or four young children. Its interior storage pocket holds wallets, keys, and other valuables. Or check out our Teton Sports Outfitter Extra Extra Large Cot, a camping cot with a steel frame. It's more than 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and supports up to 600 pounds. Then it folds up to a manageable 3.5 feet by 1 foot. Or our Teton Sports Explorer 4000 internal frame backpack. Its dual aluminum stays adjust to the contour of your back and can hold up to 4,000 cubic inches. Padded shoulder straps, padded waist belts, and padded lumbar area for maximum comfort with airflow systems to reduce heat. It's time you start camping comfortably. Look for Teton Sports products online or at a store near you.
Now you can get the same survival food U.S. Special Forces use on their toughest field missions. High protein, high energy, freeze-dried foods known as long-range patrol rations or LRPs. Soldiers love LRP rations. They're lightweight and easy to carry. Easy to prepare by just adding water. Easy to enjoy because they taste great. Civilians love LRPs as a solution for emergency preparedness and recreational activities with limited storage space, such as hiking, climbing, sailing, or RV travel. Veteran-owned Freeze Dry Guy is your exclusive source for this 2013 U.S. military overrun. Long on nutrition, these delicious entrees have a long shelf life lasting decades. But this rare opportunity, this limited supply, will not last long. You have to act now. Call 866-404-3663, 866-404-FOOD, or log on now to freezedryguy.com, freezedryguy.com.
Are you familiar with the term vigor, strength, in body and mind? He pursued his tennis game with vigor, for example. Well, I hadn't, but I learned about it from Kirk Crosby. All right, and he actually let me take a scientifically proven free vigor test. And I got 13 out of 32, not very good. But I worked on it with him, and believe it or not, now I have a 29 out of 32 and improving vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is this scientific vigor score, huh? My response is you got to take the free test available now. Get a hold of Kirk Crosby to learn about it. The number is 801-669-2211. That's 801-669-2211. Or email Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com. That's Kurt, C-U-R-T, at libertyroundtable.com for your free vigor test today. Kurt, libertyroundtable.com or 801-669-2211. Vigor test free, scientifically proven today.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool, everybody. You know, we always like to start out the show, the first segment, by reading a little bit of listener mail. And, you know, we can't even read a percent of that which is sent into us each week. But we read everything and we share with you on the air just a small sampling. And we're all the better for it. Continuing to receive a lot of mail from Sweden this week as a result of what I've done over there on television. And let me tell you, I will be appearing, or rather taping, an interview on Tuesday at 12:30 Memphis time with a very popular conservative Swedish radio broadcast. And I'm very much looking forward to that being aired. They are fans of the show, and I'm certainly fans of them after doing a little research. And these guys are just a genuine article. Christians and conservatives and nationalists, and they're just all the right things. And there are people out there, and we find them, and we attract them, and they attract us. And it's great to be able to work with them, and I'm going to be doing that show on Tuesday, and I'll let you know when it airs. Very quickly, though, just to give you another inside the or behind-the-scenes look at who we are and what we are all about. You know, we don't play characters on the air. We act and come across on the air the same way we are in private. What you see is what you get. A few weeks ago, though, we always talk about the familial bond that we have, that we share with our audience and with one another. Sam Bushman, of course, but, you know, you can't say enough about this guy. He's a hero. He stands true to his convictions. He stands by his friends. He's fiercely loyal. And those are all traits that I try to have myself. But a few weeks ago, he had a surgical procedure done on his eye. And when I found out about that, my wife and daughter and I, we gathered together and we prayed that the procedure would go well for Sam and that it would be successful. And that was a couple of weeks ago. Now, just a couple of days ago, after, again, 2 weeks had passed, my daughter walked into my office at home, and she had drawn a picture on a piece of paper. And she said, "Daddy, will you mail this to Sam and tell him that I hope his eye feels better?" And it's just crazy what the kids can remember, but because that had happened 2 weeks prior, and she had remembered that. But that's the kind of atmosphere we try to foster here in the political cesspool. It's real, it's genuine, it's tangible, you can feel it. And folks, we feel the love. You know, this is February. Valentine's Day is coming up. It's a season of love and reflection upon those who mean so much to you. And from our family here to the families out there around the world who are tuning into this show for inspiration and comfort, entertainment and enlightenment. We love you, folks, during February and always. And I just wanted to share that very quickly. So we've got an exhibit here in Memphis. We talked about this exhibit. It's called Race. That's just the name of it. And the whole part of this exhibit, its purpose is to make us believe in the fairy tale that race is a social construct and that all whites are evil. Even though race doesn't exist, race can only exist if it's to shame or guilt white people or if it's to celebrate the advancements of a minority. I mean, what was so significant about Barack Obama winning the presidency? If we're all just one human family and race doesn't exist, we're all the same color, right? And there's no difference. Well, anyway, there's no shortage of venues with that message. But really, that's the only thing you'll walk away having learned after suffering through this pseudoscientific monstrosity. It's the only consistency is that whites are always bad. After you emerge from the psychological torturing, we mentioned last week that the museum here in Memphis and wherever this exhibit hits and its roadshow will host a diversity dialogue where yuppies and other assorted guilty white liberals can share with one another about how much they hate themselves. And I would give you a much more detailed review about this exhibit, but found that someone from Seattle had already covered it quite well on YouTube. I have the whole video for you at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's about 20 minutes long. It's well worth the watch all the way through. It tells the whole story about this exhibit that's short on science but loaded with all of the politically correct talking points you can stomach. I'm just going to play the first 2 minutes of his analysis of this exhibit, and then I'm going to toss it over to Keith.
So Seattle's Pacific Science Center is currently featuring an exhibit called Race, Challenge Your Perspective. Unfortunately, it is more an exhibition of ideological activism than of hard science. As we'll see, the creators of Race, Challenge Your Perspective failed to challenge their own scientifically unfounded presuppositions on matters of race. The exhibit starts off by asserting that race is a recent human invention. Further on, a display states that race was not found in nature, but made by people in power. Racial classification provided a way to justify privilege and oppression. This social constructivist language is intended to confuse rather than clarify. Notice no definition of race is provided. Instead of an objective denotation that informs, we are presented with loaded connotations that inflame. People in power and privilege and oppression. It is undeniable that sets of inherited phenotypic traits, including skin color, are traceable to geographic ancestry. Recent innovations by powerful people of privilege didn't cause biological distinctions within our species. They were forged over tens of thousands of years. They would have been obvious to black Africans and to American Indians the first time they respectively encountered whites. Yet this exhibit implies that only powerful populations had the ability to form the concept of human racial categories. Geographic subdivisions within our species have traditionally been called races. In other species, they are called breeds or subspecies. Charles Darwin regarded subspecies and race as synonymous. He made note of human racial variations. No naturalist of his time would have thought it scientifically acceptable to exempt the human species from the classifications applied to all other species simply out of a desire to promote social objectives.
If race doesn't exist, I'd like to see, as a commenter on our website opined, two Somalian refugees produce someone like Kate Upton or Gisele Bündchen. Science is supposed to be dispassionate, Keith. It's supposed to be just the facts. you would expect an exhibit like this, or to hear something about along the lines of this, which this exhibit espouses, perhaps on the mainstream media, but in museum, I mean, now science has to be politically correct too.
Especially science has to be politically correct, James. This has been the movement ever since Jews began to dominate in the social sciences. People like Franz Boas, for example, turned anthropology, which was a perfectly respectable physical science at the turn of the 20th century, into a bunch of social babble claptrap, which is what it is right now, because of Franz Boas. People like Madison Grant were actually leading anthropologists in their day, but Franz Boas and his disciples, unfortunately, won the day. This is the movement, this is the technique that was used with government, with Jewish takeover of government in the West, particularly in the United States, in a movement that was known as technocracy, that was a very popular cocktail party topic among pseudo-intellectuals in America in the 19-teens and 20s. That would be government by experts. Well, this was because Jews had found that they were totally incapable of being elected to high office, but they had an incredible talent for being recognized as experts in their fields. People like Franz Boas and Sigmund Freud are perfect examples. So they just made the connection and said, we are going to propose government by experts. That's what we have now. That's why it doesn't matter who wins a beauty contest called an election. The people that get elected are just basically fronting for a group of bureaucrats that actually run the government. That's, you know, this is what's happening throughout, James.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to talk about Keith Alexander's recent newspaper interview. Stay tuned for that. It's exciting news.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today. Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin, just outside Traveler's Rest, South Carolina,
Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, folks, welcome back to the show. I want to give you a peek behind the curtain here of what's going on in the studio. As Keith Alexander and I sit here and broadcast live this evening from Memphis, Tennessee, we got a candle lit here, a little stress-relieving candle, because God knows we need that here. And during the commercial break, that last commercial break, we were listening to Peter and Gordon's I Go to Pieces, and I was sharing with Keith that nothing will ever be as good. It's unlikely that things will ever be as good as they once were. America will never be as good. Music will never be as good. The culture will never be as good. The people will never be as good. And public education, right on down the line, you name it. Now, I hope that's not the case, but if current trends persist, that is, you know, certainly the direction in which we're heading. And I told this the other night to Eddie Miller. I said, you know, that's what separates me from most people my age. I'm 33 years old, been hosting this show now for almost 10 years. But I said, you know, most kids believe that they are morally and intellectually superior to their ancestors, whereas I know that I will never be half as good as my grandparents. You know, how could I ever stack up to my great-great-great-grandfather who died in service of the Confederate cavalry? I mean, it just won't happen. But we can do what we can do. And what we can do is take advantage of the venue that God has given us here and tell the truth. And we were talking about this museum situation a second ago before we get to Keith's newspaper article. He wanted to wrap up a couple of thoughts about this. While you're going through this exhibit, by the way, there is every so often you will hear an announcement being played intermittently. And it says that race is a biological fiction. There is no such thing, as if. It's almost like a Soviet type of brainwashing thing that you're going through there. If race doesn't exist and it's no such thing, then we need to put an end to Black History Month, which is what February is. You know, we need to make sure that we don't accentuate the fact that there's separate races, right, Keith?
Well, you only hear that race is a social construct and has no reality whenever you are using race to point out the superiority or the achievements of white people. It's only when that comes out and a racial component is suggested that you hear this drumbeat of cultural Marxist psychobabble. Of course, the original source of it was Ashley Montague's book, Race, Mankind's Most Dangerous Myth, that came out in the 1940s. Of course, Ashley Montague, who with a name like that you would think was a member of the House of Lords, was actually Israel Ehrenreich, a Jewish sociologist, anthropologist type, again, falling right into the pattern that we were talking about before with people like Franz Boas and Sigmund Freud being recognized as the leaders of their particular disciplines, intellectual disciplines. Likewise, Ashley Montague was one too. Ashley Montague is also what they call a Murano, that is a disguised Jew, a Jew that does not have a Jewish name. And, you know, the Pink Palace, what an appropriate name for a place to be exhibiting this particular program. This is Pinko through and through. This is cultural Marxism, the new communism. This is taken up where communism failed and cultural Marxism is sweeping the field. It's taken over every Western nation. And this type of claptrap, this type of drivel, this type of, you know, blatant propaganda wouldn't have even gotten an audience in the America of the 50s. So consequently, it's telling you the fact that this is sponsored by the leading museum in Memphis, Tennessee, shows you just how far we've fallen as a people and as a nation, James.
Well, Keith, you're exactly right, but there are still the stalwarts out there that are keeping the embers burning. And I do have hope. I said, and I certainly believe that it is unlikely that things will turn around, but it is not impossible. And there is that glimmer of hope. And even if it were impossible, even if I knew, if Christ himself descended from the heavens and said, James, you're doing a good job, but it's all going to be in vain ultimately. I would say this. I would say, you know, that's fine, because we still are beholden to do our duty. You know, men have a call to duty and honor, and so therefore I will still do this to the best of my ability. And I know it gives comfort to our kinsmen.
Well, as being Christians, we're not judged by our results. We're judged by our efforts. When it comes to Judgment Day, we all hope to hear, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." That's the keys to the kingdom, people. That's what we are seeking to and striving to do. We're going to fight the good fight to the bitter or the blessed end, and there will be a blessed end, because you will be rewarded for your faithfulness by an almighty God that is the author of all good things.
God, family, republic. We've all heard that before. Those are the priorities in order. And by the way, speaking of family, and we were talking about family in the last segment, we have an article at thepoliticalcesspool.org, Marriage After Children, and it's really touching. It if you've had children, it's something you can relate to, and it's something that I want all the families listening tonight to read. Marriage After Children at thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's a Christ-centered message, and it's a good one. Keith Alexander gave a newspaper interview not long ago, and it was published this week in the American Free Press. The title of the article, which also can be found at our website this week, is Race and Poverty Play Greater Role in Crime Than Guns. And this is the story. The liberal mainstream media has been making quite a commotion over a recently released study that purports to show that states with lax gun laws suffer the worst violence in the United States. In reality, much to their dismay, what the study has really exposed is something regular readers of American Free Press already know. Race and poverty play more of a factor in areas plagued by violence than do guns alone. The best example of this is in Tennessee, which in 2012 had the dubious distinction of ranking number one in the country for incidences of violence, namely murder, assault, and rape. According to the FBI statistics for that year, most of the United States saw a nearly 1% drop in crimes. Tennessee, however, the violent crime rate went up almost 7%. More specifically, the volunteer state was first in aggravated assaults, with an estimated 479.6 for every 100,000 residents, for a total of 41,550 violent crimes in Tennessee in 2012. On January 7th, American Free Press interviewed longtime Tennessee resident Keith Alexander for his insight into the matter. Alexander is a co-host of the popular weekly radio program Political Cesspool, carried by several AM radio stations across the country, as well as internet radio. "The problem in Tennessee is mostly in Shelby County," said Alexander. "Over 50% of the violent crimes happen in Shelby County, and Memphis makes up about three-quarters of the population in Shelby County." He added that about 65% of the population in Memphis is now black. "Blacks go wherever whites go to cash in on affirmative action benefits while raising the crime rates," he said. Alexander understands the crime statistics for his state. "Domestic violence is rampant among black couples," he said. "However, the courts have a vested interest in getting more such cases prosecuted because they receive more government funds this way. Prosecutors don't want women to drop domestic violence charges or the men to cop a plea to a lesser charge. Instead, they urge the men to plead guilty with the promise that they will not be incarcerated. But the assault still goes on their record and, of course, on our statistics." I'm going to skip down a little bit to the end of the article so Keith have a chance to talk about it before the commercial break kicks in. Maryland stands out among the other violent states on the list given its stringent gun control laws. Overall, the old line state has the highest median income in the nation, the third lowest poverty rate, and one of the highest proportions of adults with a college degree. But in Maryland's case, one city, Baltimore, is responsible for bringing the whole state down. There are already strict gun control laws in Baltimore, but that has not stopped that city from becoming the fifth most dangerous in the nation, dragging the entire state down when it comes to violent crime statistics. Baltimore also has the highest poverty rate in the state and, like Memphis, a high concentration, 65% of blacks. The 2005 report, The Color of Crime, by the New Century Foundation lays it out. Blacks are 7 times more likely than people of other races to commit murder and 8 times more likely to commit robbery. Blacks are an estimated 39 times more likely to commit a violent crime against a white than vice versa, and 136 times more likely to commit a robbery. Now, here's the thing, Keith. I love these statistics. I love this article. It talks about, it's a gun control article, and also shines a spotlight onto the role that race plays in violent crimes. Here's the thing. Now, is it racist to point out hard, cold facts and statistics compiled by the FBI itself? Well, I don't think so. And I'll tell you this. In the spirit of consistency, had I been born a black man, had God seen it for me to come into this world as a black man, I would be doing the exact same thing I'm doing right now. I would probably be a Jesse Lee Peterson type of person. I would be fighting for my people, but I would be honest. I wouldn't blame the deficiencies that my people have on anyone else, and I would preach accountability. You know, if I was a black leader, I would say, you know what? Let's quit making excuses. Let's deal with this. We have problems. Whites are not causing us to go out and commit a disproportionate amount of crime. That's what I would be doing. And it's not racist to do that.
Of course, that type of objectivity is few and far between in the black community today. All the black spokesmen that are sanctioned by the mainstream media have exactly the opposite outlook. In fact, you can trace.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the Temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, we had the mic cut out there the last couple of seconds before the commercial break in the previous segment. We were talking, of course, about Keith Alexander's interview that he recently gave to the American Free Press, which was published a few days ago. You can read the entire article at our website. Keith, what were you talking about before the commercial break? I guess we were talking, of course, about the crime statistics with regards to race. And the author of the article, by the way, this is going to be a difficult one. It's Pete Papaheracles. It's a Greek gentleman, and I had the opportunity to talk to him at length as well.
Yeah, Pete's a great guy, and he's fighting the good fight up there in the D.C. area, and heaven knows it needs to be fought there, if anywhere. Okay. Now, what I was commenting about was that in today's world, the black population is presented as a monolith. It has only one opinion about everything. People like Jesse Lee Peterson are dismissed into the outer darkness. But at the eve of the 20th century, there were three primary spokesmen for black America, and they all had very distinctive viewpoints on why blacks were in the predicament they were in. Booker T. Washington said that if blacks are in a bad predicament, they need to look in the mirror to find out why. He suggested that they make themselves indispensable as good tradesmen, brick masons, people like this, so they could prevent immigration from outside the United States because they were so good at doing those type of jobs. Then there was Marcus Garvey, the guy that dressed up like Emperor Jones, and you see pictures of him with like an admiral's cap on or hat. He thought that America was so irretrievably racist against blacks that all blacks should move from the United States back to Africa. He was the primary exponent of the Black to Africa movement. But then the third viewpoint, which unfortunately prevailed, was that of W.E.B. Du Bois, who was one of the founders of the NAACP. His position was that if there was anything wrong with black America, it was the fault of white America. Unfortunately, that white guilt mantra persists to this day, and unfortunately, it's the only mainstream voice that you ever hear about racial differences and in things like crime statistics. If there's a fault, if there's a problem in the black community, we need to blame it on white people.
Whether it's radio, television, or newspaper, we will take our message to the masses by any venue given to us. And we have seemingly pulled off the hat trick of this in January, rather, hitting on all three. Let's go now to our Washington, D.C. area correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton. Scoop, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, James. How you doing?
Not too bad. What do you got for us tonight?
Well, good evening, Cisco family. Well, as the whole country is obsessed over a stupid football game in the swamps of northern New Jersey, this country is going down the tubes by the minute. Dateline Washington, D.C., the Diplomat newspaper. In 2010, Congress passed the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, or FATCA, which is to target noncompliance by U.S. taxpayers using foreign accounts. Basically, what it wants to do, the government wants to tax people who have their money in foreign banks. It's bad enough that the hardworking Americans are taxed to death as it is, but now if you're like Mitt Romney and say, hey, I'm bringing my money somewhere else because I worked hard for it, and I'm not getting my biggest bang for the buck, now the federal government passed this law in 2010. Meanwhile, nobody says, hey, let's go after the illegal aliens who pay no taxes. Illegal aliens has the benefits of a very strong military, roads, post offices, and a Cadillac welfare system that the UK competes for day in and day out. Back to you in the studio.
I'm just so glad. Keith wants to respond to that, but I'm just so glad you didn't lead off with that story you sent me from the subway. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do. That'll be the next one.
Okay, Scoop, I just wanted to tell you that I think Pat Buchanan has a perfect answer to the high taxes in America, particularly the high corporate taxes. We have the highest effective corporate tax rate in the world, in America. And this is what drives businesses offshore. This is what drives American capital offshore and lets it stay offshore. Pat Buchanan's solution to this is to have a tariff on all foreign manufactured goods that come into the United States, and every cent of that tariff revenue would be used to reduce the corporate tax rate on American companies and on American production and on American capital that stays in this nation. And if we did that, we would soon have, because we are the largest consumer market in the world, we would have the lowest tax rate, corporate tax rate in the world. We'd go down to zero. And when we had a zero corporate tax rate, we would see a reversal of the outsourcing. You would see companies, even foreign companies, purposefully putting their manufacturing facilities into the United States because they wanted to protect their market share in the United States market and not pay the tariffs. So consequently, that would be the best way to deal with the problem rather than the Obama administration's punitive measure of trying to track down so-called tax cheats who are basically just trying to take advantage of tax laws that exist.
Thank you, Keith. And Scoop, all right, I'm just going to give everyone a fair warning out there, keeping in mind that we do have virgin ears who listen to this program as well. In fact, I get letters from people who, families, husband, wife, kids, who gather around the computer or radio and listen to the show. Yeah, like they did in the old days before television. You just gather around the TV, you know, the radio. Keeping that in mind, we will ask that you choose your words carefully as you describe this next story. It is one worth mentioning, to be sure. I guess just to set the table for you, Scoop, a pregnant woman experienced the joys of diversity while riding a mass transit. What was she on? A subway? Was it a train?
It was a commuter train. It was a Metro North commuter train from Fairfield, Connecticut to Grand Central Station in the beautiful city of New York.
Tell us what happened.
What happened was this young lady, pregnant, she's going to work at her job in the island of Manhattan, and a cleaner of this particular mass transit vehicle assaulted the lady. He assaulted the lady by his bodily fluids. He was manipulating himself and came to a conclusion. And at the moment he came to a conclusion, she woke up and contacted the local authorities.
So basically,
and unfortunately, I don't have the article in front of me, but it was a Hispanic male.
Yes, okay, so you actually got very clever and creative in choosing your adjectives there. I would have said we could have even gone so far perhaps as to say he pleasured himself. It's not a laughing matter, of course. I enjoy listening to the contortions that Peter put himself through there to get that story out. But yeah, so this is what happened. The janitor, this Hispanic janitor of this train, found this pregnant woman asleep and went over and did that on her. I mean, so this is, you know, again, thank God. Thank you, Martin Luther King. Thank you, sociopathic politicians who have put in all these anti-American programs to ensure that we are swamped with people like that. I guarantee you there's not a recorded case in the 1940s and 50s of that ever happening. Ever. All right? So this is the joys of multiculturalism, Keith. Never cease to amaze it.
And the progress that is liberalism. Just sit back and let your mind wonder at all the advantages that we get through liberalism and the progress that it gives us. This is progress, apparently, having this happen today, something that would never have happened in the 40s or 50s America that we grew up in. You know, back to you, James.
I'm just saying, you know, again, if this had been a racially homogenous nation or had an ethnic makeup similar to what it had in the 50s, this woman would have not been able to have that wonderful experience. She would have been deprived of that. We should be thankful that happened. I'm sure she is. Scoop, you got anything else for us in the last minute we have this hour?
Yes. While the New York Post is doing a diligent job of reporting what's going on, the New York Daily News has decided to turn its sights on one Frank Borzarelli. Mr. Borzarelli made the news, daily news, by losing his job as a principal at the Catholic school in the Bronx. Mr. Borzarelli more or less has the same views as we do and made them public, and the daily news went after him. Well, Mr. Borzarelli lost his job in New York, and he worked outside of the Catholic school in Pittsburgh, and the daily news found out where he was. He changed his name to protect his identity, and the daily news let the school know who exactly Mr. Borzarelli is. And so, after the administration was done filing the kids in the school, they fired Mr. Borzarelli.
Folks, if you don't know the story of Frank Borzarelli, go to American Renaissance, mrn.com. They've got it all there for you, a case study. But Frank is a good man. He's a Christian man. He's a decent man. I've met Frank. He's been on this show. I've broken bread with him. He's an all-American guy. He's a New Yorker. Got great views on the issues, just like Scoop. We're not going to cast him out for being... He was an elected New York City School Board member for a number of years. But because he had conservative views, they fired him. And slandered his name so much he couldn't get hired. He changed his name so he could get hired in Pennsylvania, and they still sought him out and fired him for nothing more than having conservative views. He broke no laws, did nothing wrong, involved in no scandal. Folks, this is scary stuff. It can happen. It does happen. We'll talk more about that later. Thanks, Scoop.